Hello, and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another amazing guest to reintroduce to you now. John Laspina is a returning guest on our show. Be sure to check out his recent appearance on episode 575 of Boundless Body Radio. John Laspina is a 58-year-old retired middle school teacher of 34 years. John taught language arts, social studies, civics, and video production. John is a perpetual student, and most of his nutrition education comes from experts in the field of low-carbohydrate nutrition. He became fat-adapted about 5 years ago when he started eating ketogenic. Currently, he identifies as a carnivore and claims to have never felt more alive or more healthy. His YouTube videos serve the purpose of informing and educating viewers about the proper way of eating real, whole foods and the potential benefits that can be experienced through this approach. John encourages viewers to leave comments and questions, assuring them that he will respond to everyone. John creates his YouTube videos for free, offering them to anyone who wants to learn, as he believes knowledge is power. His ultimate goal is to help individuals become the optimized versions of themselves by learning to eat well in order to feel and look well. John Laspina, what an absolute honor it is to welcome you back to Boundless Body Radio.
Thank you for having me back, Casey.
Such an honor. I told you in the middle of our episode last time, I'm going to start out with this. If you could please muster up just a little bit of enthusiasm to be here, we would very much appreciate it.
I will try not to be monotone.
Man, just going back and listening to your episode again, I listened to it when it dropped. I listened to it again at the little community center that I go to do my walks. And just hearing you talk about your experience of transitioning through carnivore and just the laundry list of all these amazing things that are now fixed that were issues for you in the past, and knowing how consistent that story is with so many people that find this way of eating, it makes me feel more grateful and fortunate that I was able to stumble across this information myself. I really got that impression listening to that episode again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how I feel when I hear everybody else's story. And there, like you said, there are thousands and thousands of people who are experiencing the same thing. But there are also millions of people walking around in a fog, in a haze, the way we were, and we didn't realize it. And, the standard American diet food is just in your face. It's everywhere. It's at restaurants. It's in the grocery stores. It's the impulse items when you're waiting in line everywhere, right in your face. And it's just food that you've always eaten. And unless you hear these messages that we're sharing, you don't realize that there's slow toxins in there, and the sugar is turning into fat, and it's very slow. That's why it's missed. It's not a fast poison or a fast, eat this and you gain 20 pounds in one day. It's a very gradual thing. And so people don't realize.
Yeah, that's right. Don't you wish like we had some type of a pill that we could just give somebody and say, just take this pill for 8 hours. You will experience what a day of carnivore feels like, how you feel mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Don't you think that would be so awesome to be able to give something like that to people so they could experience?
It would. And people want a pill. People want true. The fast fix. Yep. And of course, if we had that pill, they wouldn't want to do the diet because they would want another pill.
That's right.
To go to the next day. So that's the thing. It does require some work on our end. But I do believe that once you get into the rhythm of doing it and you make it your routine, your habits have changed to these kinds of habits, then it's not hard. I don't even think about it anymore. It's my way of life now. That's why we don't call it a diet. We call it a way of eating, because it's not something you're going on and you have to think about and it's hard. I don't think it's hard, but when I first started, it was new. It was uncomfortable. It was different. And that's just the part that people have to go through. If they have to have a growth mindset and want to change and want to try something new. The thing is, I think they're battle fatigued with all the other diets that are out there, that they think keto is just a diet, right? And it doesn't have to be. It can be a way of eating.
I love that. One of my favorite analogies that I stole from a buddy of mine is it's basically saying, like, imagine traveling to Bali, amazing place. It's super cool. But for you, it's a great example. For you to go to Bali, you would have to travel across the United States from Florida. You'd have to take another plane after a layover to get over to Asia, probably another bus transfer to get to Bali. I don't know what kind of ground transportation you'd have to go through and checking in the hotel and all of that hassle and BS and lines with smelly people and all this stuff. But when you get to Bali, you're in Bali. And what if I told you could just stay there as long as you wanted? You would endure all of the bull crap to get there, to be able to be there. And I think of that kind of the same way.
That's a good way. I'm gonna steal that.
It's restolen.
That analogy. That's a good way to explain it. You know, you have to put the work in, but then once you get there, it's second nature.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Totally. Well, I had an awesome weekend. I turned 40 on Saturday. We went to our local Brazilian steakhouse. We know some of the waiters by first name. Had an awesome time, ate tons of food. It's so funny. You go there starving and you think you're going to be there eating all the meat for like 4 hours. And there's this point like 35 minutes in where you take a bite and your chewing muscles don't work anymore for some reason. Hormones are so powerful. So I had a really, really, really nice weekend. John, how was your weekend?
Well, happy birthday. I wish you happy birthday on your birthday, so I don't have to say happy belated birthday. And my weekend, I went to the Low Carb USA in Boca Symposium for Metabolic Health. And anybody who follows me on Facebook or Twitter, I posted some pictures with some of the giants, with some of the cool doctors and nutritionists that I follow. They talked and then they were approachable. I went up with my camera. We talked, I took a selfie. I posted it. I sat here with the very computer that I'm using, with the camera that's built in that I'm talking with you on. I'm sitting there ravenously, just typing away notes like I was a kid in school, for each one of these speakers. I learned so much. And I have access, thanks to Low Carb USA, I have access to all the speeches and all their PowerPoints again if I want to click into them. So I could talk to you from now till midnight with all the things I learned. I came home tired because my brain, I was just overloaded with so many cool things I didn't know. Wonderful. And then, of course, confirmations on all the things I do know about cholesterol and about A1C. And there was a big emphasis on diabetes type 1. Which I didn't know anything about, you know. And then they touched on type 2. And then the rest of the conference was about the keto, you know, low carb eating and all the doctors' viewpoints. Some amazing people. You want me to share with you who I listen to?
Absolutely.
All right. I may mispronounce some of their names, but a Dr. Tro Kalargian, he runs this program. It's amazing. He has a bunch of people that work with him, Dr. Tro, and they have a system where you join. They have a support system. They have apps on their phone. You cannot fail, or it's very, very difficult to fail if you want to go keto, but you want help. And he shared his entire program and his people talked. Beth McNally talked about diet implementation. Ian Lake was amazing about type 1 diabetes. Belinda Lenar, medication technology implementation. Allison Hershade was about hormonal changes for women in type 1. So it had nothing to do with me, but I wanted to listen to it. I have a friend whose daughter is a type 1 diabetic and was just diagnosed, and she's scared to death. So I feel like I have some, you know, I feel like I can talk to her at least about some cool things that I learned. Dr. Eric Westman, I got to meet him in person. He's such a nice guy. He wanted to have dinner with me. He actually said, let's do dinner. We didn't do it, but what a cool guy. Let's see. He talked about Gary Taub's book. His was about advances and challenges in type 1. Then Belinda Lenner's children living with diabetes. And then I got to finally see Dr. Sivas. Hey, Dr. Robert Sivas is the guy I'm going to talk a little bit about today when I discuss with you about addiction, because I got my knowledge from him. But he talked not about addiction in our conference. He talked about clinical implementations of a low-carb diet in type 1 diabetes, because the focus was type 1 that day. I got to go up and ask him. They had a microphone. And after the talks, people stand at the microphone, and there's rules. You have to state your name and where you're from, and you ask one question and step aside.
And did Doug reiterate those rules a bazillion times during the conference and have them broken repeatedly?
Okay, well, Doug is like the rule Nazi with that. He was hilarious because people were just saying they were starting to have a conversation and talk about themselves, and he's tapping them, stop, stop, stop.
Yep.
Oh, it's so cool. You knew who Doug was.
Absolutely.
So I got to ask Dr. Sivas a few questions in person, which was so cool. He answered them for me. My question was about the hemoglobin A1C living longer, the red blood cells living longer when your body is healthier because you're carnivore.
That's right.
He basically shot me down and said he doesn't believe in that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
He did. He did. He used this little phrase that he says that it's, he doesn't say the BS word, but he says there's a clinical word for that. And all his followers know what it is. And it's BS, you know? But I, you know, many, many other people do believe that. So, you know, I, as an educated consumer of this information, it's my responsibility now to go on the Google machine and do my own research and maybe read some books. And I make my own decision because everybody has different opinions on a lot of these things.
Yeah. Can I just chime in on that?
Yeah, sure.
The pattern that I noticed, and we talked about this last time, that your A1C dropped and then slowly started creeping up. I see that pattern all the time for people who are carnivores. I've had a hard time believing that that's something pathological. I could be wrong, but that happens a lot where somebody might have a high A1C, they stop eating sugar, so it goes really low. And if they start doing carnivore, it maybe gets down to like 4.8, but then it drifts to 4.9 to 5 to 5.1. I think you mentioned yours at 5.2. I don't often see it go more than like 5.5, but I do see that pattern all the time. So interesting question.
It is. And you just described me. I was 5.8 when I first took it, when I went keto, and it's crept up to 5.2. Now I will see in a few years, is it going to go up to 5.5, 5.65? Then I'm going to get worried. Maybe Dr. Sivas is right. And I have carbohydrate restriction. You know how you talk about insulin resistance? Maybe it's carbohydrate resistance. That's his angle. And then you have to put some carbs back in. But, you know, I'll tell you in a few years.
There you go.
But we'll see what happens. So let's see. Suzanne Schneider talked about cognitive and psychological implications of carbohydrates in type 1s. We had Peter Bruckner was amazing. Michael Hoffman. We had Mark Kuzella.
Kuzella.
Combat veterans and metabolic illness was the topic. It was really, and the angles that they came from to talk about how it improves that angle of a person's life was amazing. All right, Gurpreet Patta. Okay, talk about stereotyping. I looked at the name and I thought, oh God, this guy's going to be boring. He's probably going to have a hard accent for me to understand. Well, the guy got up there and we were glued. The man was amazing. The hormesis paradox. You know what hormesis is, right?
That's right, yep.
It's like, you know, if you do something, like if I go and sprint really hard, you know, that was like almost an extreme stress on my body, and I'm breathing heavy. My heart is racing. I feel like I'm going to die. And then there's an opposite, equal and opposite reaction that's very good for your body. So he talked about all these things. You know, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Blew my mind away. What a fascinating guy. And then Ben Bickman.
Oh.
All right. The PowerPoint pro, because I taught PowerPoint. You should see everybody's PowerPoints compared to this guy. And he is right on time. He times himself. He tells a joke every couple of minutes to keep your attention. He's on it. He was amazing. And his was shrinking fat cells, energy versus insulin. Mm. Amazing, amazing. Dr. Tro and his group were up there. Philip Avadia, I don't know if you've heard of him. He wrote a book, you know, going to keep you off my operating table. He's the thoracic surgeon. And he spoke. I got to meet him. Dr. Eric Berg, who has like 11 million followers. Again, what a friendly man. Shook my hand, spent time to talk with me, asked me questions about me, right? Took a selfie. He talked about why is keto attacked? You know, all the people that are attacking keto and all the reasons that people say it's bad for you. We see all these videos, you know, it's going to kill you, blah, blah, blah. Dominic DiAugustino. I didn't realize he lived so close to me here in South Florida.
That's right.
Got to meet him on the emergency applications of biomarker monitoring. So he talked about all the, you know, like my Apple Watch and the ring that you sleep, the Oura ring, and all these really cool things to hack into your to find out how you're doing and change things. The other question that I got to ask, I asked Dr. DiAugustino about C-peptide instead of fasting insulin. And he said, it's a better test because they never mentioned C-peptide. And that's the one that my doctor said that my insurance would pay for.
Wow.
And I found that out through Kim Howerton's book, Common Sense Labs. I mean, so I'm telling you, knowledge is power. You don't know these things unless you dip your toes in the water and find out. The other question I asked was, will taking exogenous ketones cause our body to not make our own ketones naturally? And I asked that question of Dr. D'Agostino because Dr. Sivas pushes his ketone IQ exogenous ketones and swears by them. And, you know, I didn't know, maybe they're fine, but what if I take them and then my body says, oh, I'm not going to make them anymore. And Dr. D'Agostino's viewpoint is that, yes, that does happen. If you constantly take exogenous ketone esters, not coconut oil or MCT oil, but the actual ketones, you take a shot and you keep doing that, your body will stop making its own. Sure. Because it sees it all. And then it's slow to restarting. So, you know, personally, I don't want to do it. And then the last guy to speak was David Diamond, right? I've heard of him. I read some of his articles and he was outstanding. So he talked all about LDL. Okay. Talk about a line of people at the microphone.
So awesome. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We talked the whole LDL, small LDL, large LDL, the ApoB, you know, we refuting the different doctors. So yes, I walked away in a whirlwind of I have to come home and decompress.
Yep.
But I just read just the titles off of my notes here that I shared with you, and it was phenomenal. It really was.
It's no surprise knowing Doug and knowing what a great job he does putting these things on and getting the guests he had. They're all amazing. So a lot of the same things stand out to me that stood out to you. I noticed that when I'm done, as much as I think I want to like go out to dinner with everybody and like visit, I need some quiet time. Like I try to sneak out like the back door and like go on an hour long walk or something because I just need to like process so much information. Tell me about being in the community. So if you could magic wand, replace the topics, the people that were speaking were maybe something that you would have gone to a conference when you were teaching and it was about something educational that had nothing to do with nutrition whatsoever. There is still something there. When you get in a group of those people, something different there. Can you talk about like the feeling of just being in the room with those people, regardless of whatever the topic was?
It's I'm shy. Okay. You'd never know it. And I'm an introvert, which means I get my energy from within. I don't get my energy from other people, but you'd never know it because I turn it on to talk to you. I learned how to do that as a teacher. Okay. And I can do it very efficiently. But when it's all said and done, like you said, when it's all said and done and it's over, I plop on the couch. I'm drained. Everyone drained me. Being in the room with everybody drains me. Being in an airplane sitting next to people drains me. But going there, being shy, at first I was a little hesitant to go up and ask my first question. I got up to the microphone and you probably wouldn't have even recognized my voice because it came out like I was nervous. The reason is they're all my peers in front of me. So they're, you think subconsciously that they're critiquing your grammar and your vocabulary of the medicine and saying it wrong. And I'm like, but after asking a few other questions, I built up my confidence as I always do. And the energy in the room is exciting because we all believe very similarly about carbohydrates, sugar, seed oils, oxalates. We have the knowledge. We're not in a room with all different people. And the way I know why that feels so electrifying and you get excited, there was this other woman that came there from Boca and she was from New York and she came in and she talked to me and she heard that I was from Boca too. And she was overweight and she was there to learn information, but she knew nothing about the ketogenic diet. I mean, she was there to learn, but she didn't know anybody. She never heard of any of the speakers. And I thought to myself, I try to empathize with people. It's like, what would it be like for me to be her in this room? And she must have felt like such a minority in that room. Whereas I, and probably everybody else in the room, that's our people. That's our tribe, right? It's our folks. So it was energizing. We fed off of each other. It was exciting. And the best times of the conference, even though taking notes and watching their PowerPoints and listening to the speakers, the most exciting times are the question and answer times and the little 10-minute breaks in between when you get to take pictures and talk to them one-on-one and go up to people. And they have vendors outside. They had the Keto Mojo people out there whom I met the guy 4 years ago at Austin KetoCon for the first time. And he spoke with me for 10 minutes then. And I said to him this time, I said, I don't know if you remember me, but we had a conversation. And he talked with me for another 15 minutes. Just, and it wasn't even about the meter, because he knows I have one and I know all about it. He wasn't trying to sell me anything. And he and Gemma were just the coolest people. I mean, they just took all that time talking with me, and I took a picture of him and I showed it. So it's a wonderful thing. I can't wait to go to the next one. I've got to save up some money and go to the next one. I really do. They're worth it. They're worth the money. And this one, I had to go. I didn't have to buy the hotel room or the airplane ticket.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
I could almost have ridden my bicycle there. That's how close it is. I took the car, but it was pretty close.
Pretty close. Wow. Well, good for you. That's such a cool experience. You realize, I'm sure you ran into Buzz and Bruce at some point at the most awesome people. And you think these two dudes, they're retired. They, you know, have financial wealth and they can go do whatever. And they used to go do snorkeling trips. They stopped all of that to only go to these conferences because it's so meaningful to them and their health. And I have to say thank you so much on behalf of the woman who maybe felt like she was a little bit out of place in a kind of a new scene. I try to do this. I never do it as much as I wish I would or I should. I really want to include more people and introduce myself to more people and hear more people's stories. Sometimes I walk away and there's so much of that learning going on that I forget that, like, you know, I could have put my hand around somebody else or tried to be a little bit more kind or welcoming to somebody who maybe felt a little bit out of place. So I'm so glad that you were able to do that. And it sounds like you had a wonderful experience. And I will just always say, yes, it's a sacrifice. A weekend where I go to a conference is a weekend that I sit in a conference center. I'm not on the beach. I went to San Diego in August, an awesome time to be in San Diego. I didn't go to the beach one time. Like, that's kind of a bummer. It's like my favorite spot is the beach. But the money you spend, the work I miss, everything, all of it is worth it. It's so
absolutely
worth it. And you're just so fired up for months after that. So I really...
You are. And the notes I took, I have so many ideas for video lessons I want to share. So I'm paying this for. I want people who couldn't go, I'm going to tell you, here's what I learned. And I'm excited to share all of that. So this woman that we talked about, we talked for a while, and it was all the way out in the very front of the hallway. She was actually, I can sense that she was even like apprehensive to go in. She gave me she had two business cards, and she gave me her business cards. What a nice lady. And she said, well, what about the protein? And what about all the, you know, and your kidneys? And she was asking me all the questions, the beginner questions that people ask about, you know, not, you know, doing all that meat. Doing all that meat and not having all those, you know, and then she was also concerned about the animals and the torture of the animals. And I said, I understand, you know, but so, you know, you have to meet people where they are. You know, everybody's at a different spot on the line. And she was, and the people, some of the people who were in there were way ahead of me, you know, so we're all on this little spectrum of learning and growing and changing and becoming healthier.
Wow. What a lovely experience. Like I said, I'm so glad you got to enjoy it and recount that for us. It's always the ones I decide not to go to. It's the day that it starts and I open up my social media and I see everybody and I'm just like, oh, I just want to give Tia and Vic and all my friends a big hug over there. And like saw you with Eric Reynolds, who's such an awesome guy too.
You're
like,
saying all the names of the people I met.
Everybody.
You're listing them all off. Buzz and Bruce, everybody. I met Buzz and Bruce a year and a half ago at the Orlando Keto Summit, where I met Dr. Barry and became friends with them then. So we saw them again. And I did see them in between at places I didn't get to go. Like you said, I saw them on my face. I wish I was there. I should have bought the ticket.
Those hooligans, man. I tell you, globetrotting hooligans.
Fun.
That's awesome.
And then Dr. Sivas has a lady that he works with named Cheryl. I forget her last name. And she does some of the teaching videos on his YouTube, and she's really good. And I encourage her, I said, make some more videos. She has this beautiful voice. She's pretty and she teaches like a pro. Wow. And so I got to meet her. She sat in the middle of Buzz and Bruce the whole time, front row.
That's awesome. Wow. That's awesome. Taking up my spot. I always try to sit in the front row of those things. So awesome. Wow. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Thank you again so very much for recounting that. You mentioned Dr. Sivas. So this is probably a good time to transition over into what we wanted to talk about today. So we had an amazing discussion last time. I recommend anybody go back, episode 575, where you talk about carnivore. You gave so many great tips and tricks and things that people can do to apply. And again, really motivating to know that so many different things improved with your health. And we see it all the time with so many people out there. And we kind of got to the end of our hour and brought up something, food addiction. And like, man, we need to give this the proper time that it needs. So I'm glad you were willing to come back on. I don't know where you want to jump in, man. Let's jump in wherever you think is right as far as covering food addiction. I think it's finally starting to be more accepted that this is a real thing. And I think more people are understanding that to different degrees, this is something probably a lot more of us are dealing with than we had once thought.
Absolutely, it is. And when I heard some of this information, my personality jumped right on it because I had the aha moments because it was me. I heard these descriptions and that's me. Oh my gosh, that's me. Oh, here's a solution. Let me try that. Let me try it. It works. Oh my gosh, let me learn more. And that's how I went with it. So addiction, a lot of people have their own perception of the definition. And addiction is an unhealthy relationship with something. Meaning when you engage in a habit that you do to the point that you're doing harm to yourself, but when you ignore the reality of the harm to continue the unhealthy habit, that is addiction. Addiction is when harm occurs, but you keep doing it anyway. So you could be doing something that's healthy for you and you love it. And you may say, oh, I'm addicted to exercise. You know, I like lifting 3 times a week. Well, it's not really an addiction because you're not harming yourself. You're helping yourself in the back end. So it's an absence of control. You lost control over something. And I'm going to apply it in our talk here, carbs and sugar. All right. And I think a lot of people don't realize it because we say, oh, addiction's just, you know, it's the heroin addict. It's the alcoholic. It's the cigarette smoker. Well, it is. But those are examples that we can very clearly see. So when we do something that's unhealthy or neutral, it's not an addiction. If you have a relationship with something and it does no harm, that's a healthy relationship. If you get enjoyment out of that, that's not an addiction. So think smoking, think alcohol, think heroin, think gambling, think pornography, think our cell phones can be something that we get addicted to. And then I want us to focus on carbs and sugar. So I want to break each one down so you can see how they relate. Alcoholism has nothing to do with hydration. It's about the buzz and what alcohol does to relieve the emotional tension. So everybody has emotional tension. The alcoholic, it eases that tension. Smoking has nothing to do with breathing. It's about the relief of emotional tension from nicotine. Okay, I got all this right from Dr. Sivas. All right, I give him the credit for this. Pornography has nothing to do with sex, believe it or not. It's about hiding in a fantasy world and receiving sensory information to get that dopamine hit, that relief. A lot of people don't realize that. Gambling is not about money. It's about a sensory experience. It's not about winning or losing. It's the dopamine hit, the emotional tension, relief that they get when they win, or the I'm going to win. It's some people are severely addicted to that, and it ruins their lives. They will take out all their money. Okay, our cell phones are not about getting information all the time when it becomes an addiction. And I think you can see where I'm going with this. And I've seen it as a teacher with my middle school kids, and I see it with some adults. It's relieving tension. It's getting those dopamine hits when people get the like. Oh, they liked my post. They're responding. You know, I get those hits when somebody responds to one of my YouTubes, like, oh, wow, you really helped me. I get this. Oh, wow, I helped somebody. No, that makes me want to be on it more. You know, it's a very valid thing. So it's not just the drug or a thing. It's the actions involved in it. And it's all a way to get relief from our anxiety and our tension. So as human beings, we all have anxiety. We all have tension. Now, carbs and sugar are exactly the same thing, and it's everywhere in our face. Carbohydrates and sugar is in the standard American diet. And unless you have the knowledge to eat the proper human diet, you're going to eat this stuff and get those dopamine hits. I want potato chips. I want to have popcorn. I'm going to go have some Doritos. Mine was M&Ms. Oh my God, the peanut M&Ms, tons of peanut M&Ms. And I would eat them all day long. And I would eat them about every 20 minutes. I would have some. Interesting. I would get like almost like a drug hit from some sugar. So people, unless you're hearing this, like the way I'm explaining it, you don't realize that you're doing it. You're like, well, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't gamble. I don't do all these things. Oh, wait a minute. I do eat a lot of junk food, and I eat more when I'm stressed out. So maybe I have an addiction to sugar and carbohydrates. And sugar and carbohydrates are different than meat protein, and it's different than fat in the meat, right? Because meat and fat, healthy fats, are nutrition. They have all our amino acids, our proteins, our vitamins, our minerals. Carbohydrates are not essential because our liver makes just the amount that we need. That little teaspoon in our bloodstream, it pushes glucose just so we know we don't need it. So when we add it, we get this, again, I say dopamine hit. We get this rush and we want more. Some people, most people, I fit into the most people category. I can hear the bells ringing when I eat sugar. Yeah. It's like, whoa, I want more. I want more on my taste buds. It's so good. I can't stop. And I used to eat to the point of damaging myself. Mm. All right. I would have bowel problems. I would have emotional, you know, all the things I said in my last video that I didn't realize over time damaged me. That was all from carbohydrates and sugars and seed oils, which come with processed food, the seed oils. So I don't know where to go with this from here, other than I wanted to just read that to the people. I wanted people to see that addiction is not just a chemical.
Yeah.
It's an unhealthy relationship with something that we keep doing over and over again, even though we know it damages us and we keep doing it again. Mm. That's addiction.
Yeah.
So anybody listening, you know, think about yourself, you know, take it personally and ask yourself some questions.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a really great explanation of what addiction is and how you can, you know, get addicted to, again, like pornography, but not get addicted to proteins and fats because they're more healthy, and exercise in the right proportions and all those things are fine. I've made this point before with all of the things you listed, like smoking. I'm 40. I don't smoke. It's kind of out of vogue. That's not really a big deal. I can buy cigarettes, but it's not really a draw for me. Cocaine, heroin, those things you named, those drugs. Again, I'm 40 in Salt Lake City. Like, I'm sure it's around, but I don't have a guy. You know what I mean? Like, I probably can't find it very easily. When we decide that sugar and carbohydrates are addictive, we have a massive problem because it is everywhere, yeah. On every corner. Kids sell it on the street. It's in their schools. It's literally everywhere. It's at the hardware store. It's like the last thing you see
it's
at the
lunch
store.
Menu. The lunch it's menu. Served in the cafeteria. Yeah.
It's absurd. And so if we have a world where those two things exist side by side, we're going to have some really serious problems. It's going to be really, really difficult for people.
Absolutely. You're right. And I like what you said. I don't have a guy.
Not at this
I have
point.
A guy, you know, a dealer, right? And I never thought of it that way, the way you just said that. I just have a little aha moment with you. It's like, you know, with all these things, you have a guy, you know, if you're gonna, because they're illegal, right? And but this is so legal. It's so available that people don't know that it's bad for them until they end up in the hospital, until they have the heart attack or the stroke or the whatever, the Alzheimer's. And it comes down to education and knowledge being power. And just that's why we make our video. That's why you do your radio show. That's why, you know, I'm going to these conferences and talking to people. So but people have to come. They have to be ready. They have to want to hear the message, and hopefully, because I can't. One of the speakers talked about, you know, I forget who it was. Was it Dom DeAugustine? It was one of the guys, and he's talking about his father, and his father. He can't get his father to stop drinking Coca-Cola, and it's like, and then he said to the whole audience, he says, you know, your parents don't listen to the kids. They're kids. They don't listen to their son. Just like my friends won't listen to me. They knew me before I'm doing what I'm doing now. Yeah. And my parents, when they were alive, they knew me when I was a little kid doing all the bad things or whatever. So they're not my audience. They never listened to me. So I stopped trying to share unless they ask specifically. But the people I don't know ask me questions.
Yeah.
because you know I have some knowledge that I'm so excited to impart and change their lives, hopefully.
Whoever it was, if it was Dom, thinking like the top ketone researcher on the entire planet and his own father doesn't, you know, take that same advice, whoever it was. Yeah, it's really interesting. And you know, we have had sugar, like honey has been around, fruits have been grown. Like we have been in a world of, you know, these natural foods growing. They don't often, hardly ever come with proteins or fats. Proteins and fats come from animals. We've got carbohydrates. Carbohydrates, again, they've always been around depending on where you are on the planet, different levels of seasonality. We went through the agricultural revolution 10, 12,000 years ago where we started to kind of settle down. We started to cultivate grains and grasses and did that in different parts of the world. Can we maybe set up how we got to this point where we are now, where, yeah, we've had all these natural things around. How are we now so addicted to them?
Yeah, very, very good question. Very good question. And you know, several different answers I have heard that make a lot of sense. Number one, Dr. Berry says millions of years. Other people say hundreds of thousands of years. But you go way back and we were, you know, obligate carnivores. We ate mostly meat, and we became omnivores when it was too, you know, when the fruit was ripe. We had some fruit, and the fruit back then was not genetically modified. It wasn't rebred to be sweeter over and over and over again, and it was only ripe for a few days or weeks in the entire year in that geographic region. So those people only ate that fruit for that small amount of time. And even during that time, they put on a little fat, right? But they're not going to a grocery store and filling their cart every single week with the same fruit that's genetically modified and bigger and sweeter and eating fruit every single day. And that's what we do today. Eat your fruits and vegetables. Have so many servings of fruits and vegetables a day. It's drilled into our brain. Just saw the commercial again on TV for those pills. You know, the grains years ago, you know, Jesus, you know, back in the day of Jesus, you know, with the loaves and the fishes, they were eating bread, but it's not the bread that we had today. It was ancient grains that had so much fiber and grit, and it didn't, I don't even know if they had all of the phytonutrients that we have today, but they've been so processed today so that the companies make money. And refined, and they're highly addictive because they're so refined. They raise the insulin so much in the body, and I'm sure that the original grains 2,000 years ago did not do it as much.
Completely different.
You mentioned also that, you know, honey, which comes from bees, obviously, and the bees make that from the nectar of the flowers. And, you know, you had to work your ass off and risk yourself getting stung just to grab a little bit of honeycomb, to get a little bit of honey. You didn't have it every day, all right? And they didn't make it all year round. And parts of the world doesn't have it anyway. So, you know, with airplanes and trains and automobiles and transportation, we have access to everything. Right now, I can get in the car and go to so many different stores, and everything is right there.
Yeah,
we're living in excess, and for millions of years, we were undernourished, and we had to work our butt off just to eat, and we didn't eat for 2 days.
That's right.
And then we feasted. So that's the difference.
Yeah.
With today.
For the listener, keep in mind, we're talking about grains, fruits, and vegetables. We still haven't talked anything about what everybody really eats. And
McDonald's.
Exactly. I'll give this example. So everybody knows if you go to the store and you buy a tomato, it's by and large disgusting. They're pretty gross. They don't have very much flavor. Here in the Salt Lake Valley, tomatoes grow and they're awesome. They're really, really good. Like they're sweet, they're bright, they're very tasty. They are much smaller than what you would find at the store, but they're really good. In my neighborhood, people do gardens and people raise mostly tomatoes, some other things. Sometimes people move or they get sick of gardening, which is a ton of work for very few calories. In the hot sun, you don't even get anything until like August, September. And so people leave their gardens abandoned. And if something falls on the ground that they've grown, but they're not attending to, I'll walk by and I'll grab some tomatoes and I'll put them in my cottage cheese, and they're absolutely like delicious. They're really, really good. And that happens for maybe a few weeks. And somewhere around where I live in September or early October, there's a hard freeze and all of them die. And now I have this conundrum where like those tomatoes were really good and I like them. You know, I'll drift away from my carnivore diet for something that's fresh and growing and isn't like full of sugar. Now I've got this conundrum. Do I go to the store and buy the terrible tomatoes or tomatoes just off the menu for me? And again, like if I bought a tomato at a store, that's why I don't, is they're disgusting. So as much as I want those tomatoes are not an option. They're not available to me anymore. And you could love all of the fruits and all of the honey and all of these other things, regardless of all the implications that you just said. And there's going to come a time at most places in the planet where those foods are not going to be available. And even if I travel to places like Boca, like if I go down there, you don't just see like spontaneous food growing all the time everywhere. It's just not really there.
That's absolutely true. And each region of the world, each area grows different fruits and vegetables. And the indigenous people of those areas over thousands of years, they ate only that food. They did not eat something from another part of the world. And, you know, we have access to some exotic things 24/7 in the grocery store. Things, I remember going to the store and I'm like, well, what is this? Star fruit? What is this big purpley thing? That's interesting. And I'm pushing on it and everything. Where did that, we never had that growing. So even just since I was a kid, there's more and more things in the store from all around the world, 24/7.
Yeah,
it's so weird.
Definitely want to stay away from that star fruit, which is an oxalate bomb. Knowing your history of the oxalates, yeah. I wouldn't go near that thing.
I just rewatched, by the way. I think I saw part of it, but I specifically searched and found your Sally Norton interview. I had to rewatch it again because she's just. It's like, oh gosh, so many amazing facts. Can I get back to the solution to people who have addictions? Because I wanted to continue that. So most people are oblivious of how anxious they are and how much tension they have and how afraid they are sometimes. So what is the antidote? And the antidote is an emotional management system, which sounds like this thing that somebody invented by my system called the emotional management system. But what it is basically a lot of people don't have one. And all it is going for a walk or playing a musical instrument or journaling or doing a jigsaw puzzle or playing Wordle or calling a friend or doing exercise or a sport. You know, you the big thing when you have an addiction and you can identify it is to remove it, but not leave the vacuum. Whenever people who quit their whatever, they will fail 95% of the time because there's a huge vacuum and they have withdrawal, emotional withdrawal, physical withdrawal. So remove, but also replace it with something neutral or healthy. It's like the smoker who quits smoking and then they eat a lot of carbs and sugar and fried foods. And then the harm is the obesity and the poor health. So you don't want to replace something with something bad. You replace it with something helpful. And most people don't have the tools in their emotional management toolbox to deal with the tension, the pressure, the negative emotions. So they turn to things that are bad to get that emotional release from that tension or that fear. So to build or create your toolbox, it's so simple. And I'm going to share what I have in my emotional toolbox, if you'll let me. All right. Absolutely. So I told you that one of the things I like to do is I like to play musical instruments. That's me, though. Everybody's different. You have to find your own way. So I play the piano for fun. I bought a cello and I hired a cello teacher who came to my house a few times a week a couple of years ago, and I taught myself how to play the cello. I'm really bad at it, but how fun, right? To make a sound, make it work. I brought a couple of them here. I bought my ukulele.
Nice.
It's so easy to learn how to play a ukulele. I'm not going to play, though. Just recently, I bought a pan flute.
Wow.
Because I heard nice. A pan flute. You know, you can, and, oh, it's... I have so much fun with instruments that make notes. Okay. That's me. All right. Some people, they could care less, but you know, some people just take a fidget spinner, do that for a few seconds or whatever. And I have little magnetic things and, or, you know, go for a walk. You know, there are so many things that you can do. Learn a new, I taught myself Portuguese a few years ago because that was one of the new little hobbies. I had a lot of kids that came from Brazil when I was teaching, and I wanted to talk to them a little bit when they came in. Some of them spoke no English, and I learned a lot of Portuguese.
Parabéns.
And a lot of people, yeah, and a lot of people at work let me practice on them because they spoke Portuguese too. And it's very similar to Spanish. It's very similar to growing up with Italian. You know, it's a Latin language. And it's, you know, there's so many things. Find things that you love, that are fun, that are hobbies, and put them in your emotional management toolkit. And then when you want to have that cigarette, you want to have those carbs and sugar, whatever the addiction is, you know, we're talking carbs and sugar. You go to one of those many things. Some of them can be short-term and some of them may be long-term, but you're doing that and it's enjoyable and you get all this positive energy out of it instead of all that dread. When you indulge in the thing that you're addicted to, you feel bad. You beat yourself up over it because you know you shouldn't do it, but you keep doing it again and again. So it's a removal and a replacement with fun things. And once you do it a few times, you get the hang of it and you go to it more and more. I met a guy at Low Carb Boca USA. His name's Joe Onesta. Okay. He's not a famous person like we've been mentioning. And we went to lunch and he's a hypnotist practitioner. I'm like, whoa, a hypnotist. And he told me about his practice. And I shared with him my last lingering addiction effect of carbs and sugar. And that was that every time I have dinner, when dinner's over, all my life, I had dessert. I always had sugar, right? I'm off the sugar for 5 years, but damn it, that synapse is still connected in my brain. I still have this craving. It's strong too, this strong craving to have something sweet mentally, because I always had it after dinner for decades. And I told him, how do I change this? You're a hypnotist. And I'll show you what I did here. He gave me an example of what to do. We talked about it. He said, take a ball. So I told him, well, I'm going to take some Play-Doh here, right? I have. And he said, as soon as you have that, that feeling right after dinner, take a ball and do this for 2 or 3 minutes and just calm down. And that's like a removal replacement. I'm doing this instead of the thought of having the carbs and sugar.
Literally just passing the ball from hand to hand.
That's all. That's all. And he said, and I forget, he kind of explained it, but I didn't understand it completely. But you're rewiring your neurons with that action and your thoughts at the exact time that you have those sugar cravings in the brain. And he said, and I said, how long is it going to take? 30 or 50 times? He said, no, 4 or 5 times, and it should be gone. So I'll let you know, because this is, you know, I just started doing this today. Very interesting. And I gave him your name. He might reach out to you. I think it would be make a great interview. Cool. For your interviews, how he's helping people with their carbohydrate addictions. And he gets a lot of type 2 diabetes people that they can't stop eating the sugar, and he helps them through other ways, through hypnotic ways, which is just kind of mindfulness, yeah. Right? Yeah. So it was really, really cool. So he told me to focus on what I was doing and to relax, and I'm going to try it. I'm open to trying it, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Please do. So all of that was really great information. It sounds like, again, that take something out, put something back in. That makes a lot of sense. Very practical. People can explore different things. I want to explore your living room, dude. You've got like musical instruments and Play-Doh and all kinds of fun stuff. I want to hang out. It's great.
I should take you to my music room. We have a music room in the house. That's where all the instruments are. I have a classical guitar. I have a Spanish, a acoustic guitar. I have a cello. We have a saxophone on the wall. I when I was a little kid, my mother and father used to tell a story that we would go to Kitty City, which was this like a Toys R Us kind of place, Kitty City in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, where I grew up. And I would just, my little brother would go to the army men and the guns, right? The plastic guns and the boy stuff. And I went to all the toy musical instruments, and I would just play on all the, I wanted to make them all make sounds. Even when I was a little kid, I love Go for it, you know, right? Go figure. It's just, it's a passion. So I tell people, what is your passion? What gets you fired up and happy and excited? And that in your toolbox and use that. And Mike, it's almost like, you know, whatever that addiction is, it's actually easy to stop because you're replacing it with joy and happiness and fun.
Yeah, I love that. The challenge, again, is that sugar hits those dopamine sites. It feels really good in the moment. And so we often sacrifice things we want long-term for something that feels good in the short term. So that's really challenging. There's also something that happens in the brain. I'm just going to say, like chemistry-wise, something happens in the brain when you change your diet. I do not think the same way that I did 10 years ago. I do not respond to stress the same way that I did 5 years ago. All of that changes. And I think one of the really important things to do is rather than focus on this is, you know, you mourning the loss of all of these, you know, wonderfully delicious foods that you've eaten for your entire life and having dessert after every dinner versus, wait a second, if you do change the diet, there is basically for most people an unlimited amount of these other foods that can actually also be very, very delicious. You, like I said, do not need to limit them. They'll be like me going to that Brazilian steakhouse where I can't eat and one more little piece of picanha that's so delicious. I can't, my mouth will not work to be able to get it down. You can get to that level of enjoyment out of your food and, and that food will change not only your physical appearance, but it will change the way your brain works. And over time, this will become easier and easier and those cravings will go down. Is that something you've noticed with yourself?
The physical cravings have absolutely, mine have disappeared completely. And the foods are still there. Those, that cheesecake, those M&Ms, the Coca-Cola, it's all there. And I see it when I walk through the stores and the impulse aisles and everything, because I have to pass by them. I have to walk through the bakery section to get to the meat section, you know, in our grocery store. Something switched in my brain. I don't see those as so amazingly tempting anymore. I see them differently because I don't want to say brainwashed because that's a negative connotation, but I changed the way I think about what they are. I learned what carbohydrates are, what sugar is, what it does to the body, how my pancreas reacts. So when I see this cake that I used to, you know, salivate over, I don't salivate over it anymore. My brain doesn't see it that way. My brain sees it as, oh my gosh, look at that toxic mess. Sure, it tastes great, but it ain't worth it. It is not worth it to me because I know my addiction. If I take a little taste, I'm going to take another taste and another taste. And I know it's bad for me. My brain switched over. Your brain switched over too. We know the knowledge part, at least for me, the knowledge part has changed. I didn't know why. I mean, people told me, oh, that's junk food. Pop-Tarts are bad for you. You know, this candy's not good for you. We know that, but we didn't know that. We didn't know all the fine details about what it does to the body's organs and our blood sugar. And it actually changes the neurons in the brain. You know, you want that dopamine hit that the sugar provides. And my eyes open wide when I see sugar because, you know, it's a drug.
Yeah.
It's addictive.
Yep.
It really is. And, you know, our ancestors had it in very small amounts at certain times of the year, like we mentioned. And I think it tastes, fructose is amazing and sweet for a reason. Fruit is meant to be eaten. It really is, because you eat it and then, you know, the animals poop out the seeds and the seeds germinate and grow again. Like there's a whole reason that it is sweet. It's the same reason that certain plants are bitter and disgusting, but we eat them anyway. I mean, look at onions, look at garlic. Why do we love those now? When, you know, you give that to a baby and what is their original initial response? They spit it out.
Yeah. I just finished a book The Most Delicious Poison that talks about all kinds of things like that, like the bitter compounds and all these things and why kiddos don't like that stuff. But as you grow, you start to appreciate the taste of coffee and those bitter compounds. Very interesting.
You make yourself appreciate it. Everybody else is drinking it, so it must be good. Let me try it again. And like, oh, okay. I mean, I used to love coffee, but when I was younger, I thought it was like, how do you drink this bitter stuff? Oh.
Totally.
So what do? You dump a ton of sugar in it.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. Dr. Sivas also talks about like windshield wipers. You know, like we have emotional tension, and like every 20 minutes, just like windshield wipers on a day where it's drizzling and you put it on a delay, it clears the windshield so you can see until the next time it has to do this. You can do that every 20 minutes with a non-caloric drink. And I do that with my water bottle. This is ice cold water. I have reverse osmosis under the sink. I add a Relight. Revan's Relight electrolyte powder. I do. All right. I'm a carnivore. I put a little lime in there, a couple drops of lime, because I like it. I like it. And I want the citric acid, to be honest with you, because I still have a lot of oxalates inside my body, and it breaks up any potential oxalates that could be forming in my kidneys. Somebody who's a coffee drinker, you make a whole thing of coffee, you know, and you can have hot coffee all day long. You take a sip every 20 seconds, just a sip. It's a zero calorie sip. It does no harm. Water does no harm. And it's like the windshield wipers. You get a little bit of emotional tension release. Just all you need to do. Instead of cigarette, instead of M&Ms, you take a little bit of the zero calorie. And it's called a bridge. It bridges you over that tension. So you don't reach for carbohydrates and sugar. You come up with something else that's harmless, just like this, to get you to the other side. And then you go another 20 minutes, a half hour, 40 minutes, and then you take, bridge you back over again. Such a simple concept.
Yeah.
And I think I was doing it all along, but he gave it a name. He calls it a bridge. And it works.
Yeah. I love that.
I pass that on to the listeners.
Yeah, I love that. Is there anything else we need to know about food addiction? This has been, I think, a really good comprehensive kind of a presentation all about this stuff. It's been really fascinating.
I'm sure there's lots more about food addiction, but I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm still in the middle of, you never stop learning. You're a perpetual student when it comes to food, food addiction, to eating properly. Anybody who's listening, do your due diligence and learn from the doctors themselves. I'm not a doctor, but I learn from them. And I apply them to my life. And the big thing about any of this, Casey, is application. All right. People read books and they're smart and they're knowledgeable. But if you do nothing with that knowledge, what are you? You know, you're just an encyclopedia. You take something that you learn and you say, now, how am I going to do this in my life? And you try it and you see if it helps. And if it helps, you make it a regular part of your life, and then you add on new pieces of information. Over 5 years, I've added on so many things that, like, I don't drink out of plastic water bottles anymore, because plastic releases bisphenol A, which is BPAs, when it gets heated. And the water bottles are in the warehouses and they're on the trucks and they get really hot. And everybody's drinking out of plastic water bottles. All right. People who go to Starbucks and they get the paper cups, what is the paper cup lined with? It's lined with a plastic waxy coating, and they're drinking their coffee, hot coffee, and they're getting bisphenol A's. They're heating up food in the microwave in their Tupperware. You know, so I made that change. Like, I went around the house and I started fixing that and not doing that. I could take this further. I know I'm not talking about addiction now, but I'm just talking about knowledge. You know, whatever it is, whether it's addiction or anything, when you learn something, don't stop there.
Yeah.
All right. Ask yourself, what can I do with this piece of information to make my life better? Yeah. And if it doesn't do anything, okay, then it doesn't. Try the next thing. And you make your life better and you improve your life over the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thinking about that and thinking about your own story, which you shared with us last time, again, starting 5 years ago, it started with eliminating carbohydrates and sugar. That's where it started. Mm-hmm. Today, you're talking about water bottles and microwaves and all these other things, right? And I want the listener to understand, like, I'm speaking for myself. I'm pretty sure I'm speaking for you. We, John and I, know how difficult this is. You are, just like we are, cocaine addicts in a world where there's cocaine everywhere. It's cheap. It's delicious.
Right.
It's really good. You can buy it everywhere. It's not frowned upon socially. It's just, you're just going around where there's bowls of cocaine everywhere. And at some point, your health is going to pay the price. We are not supposed to live in a world where cocaine is available everywhere, and it is, and people are suffering the consequences because of it. And there will be a point when it sucks bad enough for you to sit down and say, like, maybe I need to do something different. And it's uncomfortable. It's not fun. Socially, can be really challenging. And it sucks. And John and I understand, and we want to encourage you to start to take steps in that direction. Take some of these great practical tips that John has taught us today, and like he said, apply them. And then you've been mentioning knowledge so much. Understand that food companies are doing this on purpose. They are taking playbooks out of the smoking play that they ran, and they're running it, and they're running it on you and your families. And again, not your fault. Your parents fed it to you when you were 3 months old because it stopped you from crying, and you got it at every birthday party and at every school lunch and after every meal, and you get all the snacks. It's not your fault. It is your responsibility now. Use the knowledge that these people are screwing you out of your health and screwing your family and killing your parents and everybody you know. And use that to start to change and take those steps, because you will be rewarded. It will not be as difficult. You one day will walk by a cake and it will look like a toxic mess. It will not seem like a cake. It won't be worth it. You'll dabble and it won't even taste that good. I really want the listener to take this information and actually make that change.
Absolutely. You encapsulated all of that perfectly, Casey. You really did. It's absolutely... That's the way it is. And think of an alcoholic too, with a drink standing right in front of them. They can't not take it if it's standing right in front of them. And everybody's doing it. And alcohol is that way. Alcohol is legal. We use it to celebrate, you know. I remember seeing, you know, what do you give somebody when the baby's born? Here's a cigar. Right. Yeah. So the tobacco industry put that into Hollywood first. Hollywood used it. You know, Ricky and Lucy and Desi, and everybody smoked on television. The doctors smoked. So everybody started smoking. Well, now we're changing and showing that that's hazardous. We need to do that with the junk food in Hollywood. That would be, there you go. That's all we have to do. If we can get Hollywood to come on board with eating properly. I hate to use the word keto, because keto can be demonized. You know, it just eating properly is what I say. The proper human diet, eating correctly, which is the way humans ate for thousands and thousands of years. We've just changed this since like the late 1800s, you know, with the Industrial Revolution and with refrigeration and transportation. All of this emerged into what we have today. We have McWendy Kings. It's on every corner, everywhere. And people, and here's another thing. It just popped into my head, Casey, is we are... I don't want to sound accusatory, but we're lazy. We don't want to cook anymore. We want the fastest, simplest way to do it. We have microwave ovens because we can't get it hot enough, fast enough. We want to unwrap it. We're busy with the kids in school and everything. But, you know, we were busy with the kids in school before we had microwaves and before, you know, refrigeration was really big. What did they eat back then? People had to cook the food. People had to make the food. A lot of people will buy boxed and packaged food because it's easy and it's convenient. And that's a big thing that we have to fight, because the food that you and I eat, we have to cook it. We have to prepare it and make it, which I don't think is hard. I mean, I have a grill, I have an oven, I have a stove, I have a pan. What else do you need? You know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's just like you putting out this information for free on YouTube. If this is a priority to you and you want to know this information, beep, boop, beep, look up carnivore simple, carnivore cheap, carnivore air fryer. Oh my gosh. You can buy an air fryer for $40. You can buy a sous vide for $40 or $50. You can buy a vacuum sealer. Dude, I had earlier today, I had 7 hard-boiled eggs that I make in a batch of 2 dozen at a time that takes me very little active time of cooking. I've got my chuck roast that's been cooking in my sous vide for the last 24 hours. That's my dinner tonight. I don't put much thought into these things because I learned, though, because I got there eventually. It was important to me to cook my food. It was important to you to fix your health that you eventually got there. So again, for the listener, there's resources. Talk to people, reach out to us. Like, we can send you some really simple, easy recipes and make it really easy on yourself.
I'll talk to anybody once. I'll talk to them on the phone if they want. I mean, I want people to experience the good health that I'm experiencing. I mean, it's there. Yep. It's available. Just like you said, it's there's so you can watch YouTube how-to videos on how to do and make some of these things. It's so easy. We just have to do it. And it's sad that you're right. You know, I had the kidney stone and that's why I went carnivore, right? I was obese and that's why I decided to go keto 5 years ago. People unfortunately need a crack in the head. They need pain. They need something bad to happen before they're like, oh, I better change. If I don't change, I'm going to die or I'm going to get, you know, too obese. And even somebody who looks and seems pretty healthy, but they're eating the standard American diet, it's just a matter of time before something happens. It could be arthritis that really isn't arthritis, you know?
Yep, I totally agree.
Skin conditions, you know, Alzheimer's is the new thing that they're talking is a type 3 diabetes, and they talked about it a lot at the symposium because they were talking about all the different types of diabetes. There are so many people who are hurting, and I think this is the answer. I think it's so easy, but I guess coming from that angle, it's not so easy. Like, what do I do? Where do I start? I don't know what to do. So a lot of my videos are, you know, how did I start? Or what did I learn? And I say, go through your cabinets, go through your kitchen, you know, take these things out, go to the store, put these things in. So simple. Today I had soup. I love soup. I make my own bone broth. So all the bones from all the meat that I have, I put in a bag and I put it in the freezer. And then when the bag gets full, I take my crock pot. And I put in the crock pot for 12 hours on high and just let that sucker, all the marrow and all that meld together. And then I put it through a sieve and I pour them into mason jars and stick them in the refrigerator. And then it's gelatin. That's collagen. Oh my God, it's so healthy. And I scoop off the fat on the top and I use that for cooking. And then, so I put that in the pan today and I took, last night's meat, cut it up, put it in there. I made 4 whole eggs. I put it in there. The hot bone broth cooked the eggs, right? Put some salt in there. And I put some pork rinds in there. So they're like Chinese noodles, right? And you get the crunch and it's soup and the egg and the meat. So good.
So good.
And it filled me up. Yeah.
And you're just buzzing afterwards, that mental energy. I can feel it now.
And it was literally, it took me 10 minutes standing on the stove, adding all those things and heating things up. And I poured it in the bowl. 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going through the drive-thru at McDonald's.
Yep.
It took me 10 minutes. And when I was working, and that's a good little segue into, all right, how do you do it when you're busy? All right, I'm retired. I'm home. I have the kitchen. I have all this free time, which I love. I get to make all this food whenever I want. You know, my lunch and my dinner, I get to make amazing food. But when I was working the last couple of years, I had to plan. So the night before, I would take little glass jars. I would save things with jars with lids because I don't use Tupperware. And I would put the meat in the glass jar. I put certain things in the glass. I take them all into a bag into work. And then I heated my bone broth up in the microwave at work that I have in my classroom, that I had in my classroom. And I assembled everything and stirred it all up and ate it real fast before the kids came back. And, and if it wasn't that, it was just something else that I brought. It was always a leftover from a dinner the night before. It was meat. It was chicken. You know, it was pork. I ate the same way, but I just thought about it ahead of time and put them into little containers and brought them to work. So you can eat well at work as well.
Yeah.
But you do have to plan.
Plan ahead. Yeah, I love that. Man, this has been another super fun conversation. I love the time I get to spend with you. I really hope there's a listener out there that maybe thinks we're a little bit nuts, but wants to go out and try this. And hopefully one day you and I will be able to meet them and give them a huge hug at one of these conferences. That would be an absolute dream. Thank you for, just like last time, thank you for going on this journey and being so enthusiastic and willing to share this information. Just like the last one, I think this is going to be full of lots of tips and tricks for people who this is afflicting. So one more time, where can people go to find you and connect with you and your work?
All right. Thank you, Casey. I can't believe it's past an hour already. I am a carnivore teacher, just carnivore teacher on YouTube, and I will come up. Same thing for Facebook and for Instagram. And what are some of the other ones? Nobody looks at the other ones. So those are the big ones. Or you can just type in my name, John LaSpina, and you'll see me on there. And again, I'm just offering information that I learned. All right. So I take my phone, I find something that I had an aha moment. I put it into my phone, and that is my topic. I made one this morning that I just posted today. It has some views already. I forget what it was. I wrote, all the things I wish I knew before I started keto carnivore. And I talk about seed oils and oxalates. And that was today's video. So I put a video out every Monday and every Friday, and to hopefully, get somebody, reach somebody. Somebody wanted to learn and they found me. And they changed their life, just like other influencers have changed my life. I got to meet a lot of them last weekend.
So cool. Cool. Yeah. Well, your content is changing lives, and it may not be to the scale that any of us want, but it is information that's got to be out there. It's like you said earlier in the conversation, when somebody's ready, the teacher appears, and you are a wonderful teacher in real life and also on social media. We really appreciate you. So thank you again so very much, John, for coming on our show today. Just so grateful for you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio. Thank you so very much for continuing to listen to Boundless Body Radio. As 2023 has come to a close, and we're starting another new year in 2024, I always try to reflect on not only the direction that we want to go in the future, but also how much we have grown in this last year. Our podcast has now generated well over 400,000 downloads from all over the world, and it's all thanks to fantastic listeners like yourself. I hope you are as excited for the new year as we are around here. The lineup of guests that we have coming up is absolutely staggering, and we're always striving to bring you the best content from the most amazing people in health, nutrition, and wellness. Remember that you can always head on over to our website to book a complimentary 30-minute session with us at myboundlessbody.com. On our homepage, there is a Book Now button where you can select a time to speak with us about your health and fitness plan, especially for the new year. We've absolutely loved chatting with so many of you out there to bounce ideas off each other and try to come up with plans to help you achieve specific goals. And seriously, I really do mean this. Even if it's just to say hello and introduce yourself, we absolutely love connecting with our listeners in the community. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel as well if you want to watch these full interviews and also shorter interviews on more specific topics that are taken from these interviews. We've gotten really great feedback over there, and it's also a really fun way to interact with people who comment. We read and reply to every single YouTube comment we get, so be sure to subscribe to our channel and leave as many comments as you like to keep the conversation going. And of course, if you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to make sure that the podcast gets out to more listeners. Your 5-star ratings and reviews are the best way to support us here at Boundless Body, and to support the podcast at Boundless Body Radio really only takes a moment, and it's very meaningful to us. Cheers to 2024, and thank you again for listening to Boundless Body Radio.